You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're delighted to have you with us again, whether you're listening or watching live tonight, or you're joining us on a podcast or a replay. We are just happy that you're with us. That was a Hot Texas Swing Band starting off the show with their song Hot Texas, performed by Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And you know, that music just makes me want to have some chocolate.
Chocolate?
I can't wait to have some chocolate.
It has something to do with our book tonight.
It does. Who is our special guest tonight, Jim?
Gene Cooney.
Hi, Gene.
Hi.
I have my M&Ms.
And I have mine too, but I ate them all when I was backstage.
We'll have to explain to the audience a little later.
We will. We'll talk about M&Ms. Well, you're delighted. We're delighted that you're with us. Jim has a little intro. He's going to go ahead and read, and then we're going to get right into chocolate and conversation.
Okay. Today's guest, Gene Cooney, is a humorist and the author of four quirky murder mysteries set in the northwest corner of Minnesota, home to an abundance of Scandinavian Lutheran farmers. She and her books have been featured on a variety of television and radio shows, as well as in newspapers and magazines across the Midwest. Her work humorously highlights the people and the way of life in that area, an area she loves and calls home. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And the book we're going to be talking about tonight is, I have to get that right now, it's Murder, Don't You Know? A quirky murder mystery with recipes. I've already been looking at all those recipes, Gene, and I think some of them are calling me into the kitchen.
Well, maybe. Or maybe they can call Jim in.
Yeah, well... Yeah, he typically is in the kitchen. I think he's excited to hear me say that maybe I would like to get in the kitchen and make some of these hot dishes. Well, we're delighted to have you with us. Do you want to tell our audience a little bit about yourself and maybe when you started writing?
Okay. Well, as Jim said, I'm from northwestern Minnesota. 10 miles south of the Canadian border, 10 miles east of the North Dakota border, way up in the Red River Valley. We're big farm country, not cattle, but fields. We do the grains, and that's what Halleck's all about. Little communities, farming communities, populated primarily by Scandinavian Lutheran farm families. And somehow that's where I grew up. I am neither Scandinavian or Lutheran, but that's where I ended up. And it's my home. And so I write about that. I started writing. I've always written. And professionally, I wrote a lot. But it was always very, I worked for the Department of Justice. And my writing was very serious. And so I needed an outlet. And so I started writing humor. And as a result, I did plan to have it published, but a publisher picked it up. And my first book, this one, Hot Dish Heaven, was born. That one was born. And then two others, Second Helping and Potluck, came right very quickly. after that. And they're all quirky murder mysteries set in that area, with, and they all contain old-fashioned farm community recipes. We call it funeral food because it's the food that's served in the church basement traditionally after a funeral. And now I've started a new series called the It's Murder series. And the first one, as Bobby Jean pointed out, is It's Murder, Don't You Know? The next one in the series is It's Murder, You Betcha. And that one comes out next spring.
How fun. You betcha. Yeah. You know, don't you know, and you betcha, they are terms that are probably obviously very well known in your area. My family was they did live in Minnesota for a short time, but Midwestern for sure. And those terms, my mom and dad used, you know, don't you know, and you betcha, you know, they weren't unfamiliar to me. But no. I imagine to a lot of readers, they probably are.
They probably are a little different. There's also oofda, and which is when you're just amazed at something. Oh, oofda.
Oofda. I got to remember that. Oofda.
I've heard it before. So that's what that means, though.
Yeah. You write, as you just described, the quirky murder mysteries. They're also, and I would say they're also cozies. Cozy murder mysteries.
Right.
And there are, within the mystery world, there's lots of different sub genres. You want to talk just a little bit about what is a cozy mystery and what does a reader look for or expect in a cozy mystery?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. Cozies, you'll often find them in the bookstore or in the library in a section within the mystery section, but they're often in their own little area. They are usually set in a small community or a small group. The murder usually or almost always will take place off the page because cozies are not going to show a lot of gore. They are not going to show gratuitous sex. They are not going to have much swearing in them. They're just a fun read. Oftentimes they're humorous and they're just a fun read. And the protagonist, the investigator, the murder solver is usually a woman. Not always, but usually. But it is always an amateur sleuth. These are not police officers. They're just amateurs who oftentimes will fall into the case because of a need to be there because maybe a relative is accused or maybe the relative is killed. So they feel compelled to get involved. Mm-hmm. And then they usually somewhat stumble into solving it.
The local law enforcement folks, are they always happy about that sort of, you know, offerings of help and sort of anything like that?
Well, I think you're right. I think sometimes in cozies, and I'm guilty of this too, local law enforcement can get picked on a little bit because that's just the nature of the book. If law enforcement is going to be so competent that they can solve these murders in a day or so, there's not going to be a cozy story. But I know the officers I've talked to have been real fine with it. They just know we're just having fun.
Yeah. Well, and they often seem to take place. This one, the center is a cafe in a way. That's kind of where everybody gets together, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Mm-hmm. But I know some of them, it seems like bookstores, pastry shops, libraries. It's often, you know, businesses are often kind of the home spot because I think that's where people gather.
Right. And you're right. And in my stories, in farm communities, the cafe is the hub. Okay. And so it just made sense to have my protagonist's sister is the right. owner of the local cafe.
Right. And because it's the sister, she has enough time to kind of keep her business going. Some cozies, I wonder, how does that baker keep her bakery going if she's out all the time, or the person who owns and runs the tea room, if she's out all the time mm-hmm. trying to solve mysteries, how does that business?
Exactly. You're exactly right. And I even like to make a little fun about some of those things in my books. But Grace, the owner of the More Hot Dish Please Cafe, we point out right away that is open 6 days a week, but it closes by 2:00. And that actually is very common mm-hmm. in little towns. They open early because the farmers want to eat breakfast by 6:30 or 7:00. But then after lunch or after early afternoon coffee, you might as well close up.
Right.
So everybody eats at home in the evening for an evening
right.
meal.
Yeah, have their hot dish at home.
Yeah.
You also mentioned when you talk about the murder doesn't, we don't really see it. It tends to also be, the victim tends to be somebody that it's okay that they,
nobody likes them.
That they've been, wiped out of the story.
Yeah, really. That's so true in cozies. The cozy readers don't expect to read a book and be sad, In these books, the victims, they aren't good people.
Yeah. But you do want the murderer not to be a good, you don't want to see that the murderer is a good person. You always, you kind of want a stinker to take out a stinker.
Yeah, somewhat. Although in my book, sometimes the murderer is a sympathetic character because maybe the murder was an accident, really.
Sure.
Or maybe, the murderer was an elderly person and not in full, they weren't fully in their right mind or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we both finished the book, so we're not going to do any spoiler alerts here. But Jim, were you surprised when the murderer was revealed? Were you surprised, or did you?
Actually, I was surprised.
You were?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Good writing.
I kind of go, when I read a book, I kind of go with an open mind.
Yeah.
And let the story take me there. I don't necessarily try to figure out early on who did it. One of these main characters probably did, but sometimes in a message, somebody comes out of nowhere, and
yeah.
Who is this person?
Yeah.
Well, Jim, you're right, and that's a big no-no. In murder mysteries, but you still see some writers do it. Mm-hmm. The idea is you shouldn't be cheating or teasing your reader. At the end of the story, your murderer shouldn't be coming out of nowhere, just got to town and killed them or something. No.
Right. Well, and in this case, of course, this person was part of the cast, overall
right.
from the beginning.
Right.
But we do, as readers, and we're following along with Doris, we're going to talk, when we come back from a break, we're going to get into the characters and talk more specifically. But we're kind of following Doris. She's one of the two sisters, one of the strong four strong women. And it's in her voice. And so we're following. We only know what she knows.
Exactly.
And she goes down lots of, not rabbit holes, but she'll think it's this or she'll think it's that. So then we're like, oh, it must be. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh.
And that's why these little cozies, excuse me, are often written in first person. Because uh-huh. then you're limited to just this one person's thoughts and what they see.
Right.
And they do go down rabbit holes and they do jump to conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the book kind of fun.
Yep. And there is a detective, you know, there is a sheriff that is investigating and he finds things that he doesn't really share. And he has his own, you know, he's doing his thing. And we don't know what his thing is that he's doing until they have conversation. And he might say, well, you know, we've learned this, or I can share this with you. And then we get another little, I'm like, oh, because Doris has that now too.
Yeah.
To be thinking, you know. So yeah. Very fun. We are going to take a very short break. We want all of our readers and listeners to know where they can get your books. And so here is a little spot about the Out West Bookshop. Stay tuned. Don't go away.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with Jim and Bobby Bell and our special guest tonight, Jean Cooney, and her book,
It's Murder, Don't You Know?
We were just talking, Jean. Did you want to read a passage?
Oh, I will. I got to put my glasses on.
This will be the perfect time for us to have an M&M.
There you go. And are you going to tell them what the deal is with the M&Ms?
I think you need to tell.
Doris loves M&Ms.
Tell us about Doris and M&Ms.
Yeah, Doris just loves M&Ms. So we have to have them when you're reading. I'll just read the first little intro to the story, because that should give readers a flavor of what the story's like. This is not an earth-shattering book. It's not the great American novel. It's not going to cure all the world's ills, but it might make you laugh. So
yes, it will make you laugh.
It will make you laugh.
Yeah. The evening breeze caressed my cheeks and propelled shivers down my arms. It was the closest I'd come to a sexual experience in more than a year. Physical intimacy had been missing from my relationship with my husband, Bill Connor, during the last 3 months of his life. I became Mrs. Doris Connor 4 decades ago and a widow when Bill died of a massive heart attack while harvesting soybeans last fall. I had stopped sharing a bed with him last summer after learning of his affair with Destiny DeLovely, the oversexed overnight waitress at the truck stop out on I-29. With a name like Destiny DeLovely, Trampton was inevitable. And because the Red River Valley of northwestern Minnesota, where we lived on Bill's family farm, was sparsely populated, it was only a matter of time before she got around to hitting on him. But as I explained after happening upon her leopard print thong in the lunchbox Bill had forgotten in the tractor, he didn't need to accommodate her.
Very good.
I remember laughing. This is page one. And, you know, when we were reading this, Jean, it was so fun because we were, you know, reading on our own time. And then there was some time when we were actually sitting on the couch and reading. But one of us would be ahead of the other, or, you know, and Jim would say, oh my gosh, I have to read this. I have to read this aloud. And it is something in the reading aloud that brings out even more of the humor. You know, I would have already read some of the passages that he would then read aloud. And I'd go, wait a minute, what page was that on? You know, and I'd go back and go, oh my gosh, that was hilarious. You know?
Well, I think you're right, Bobby Jean. I think these books are going to make good audible books. We're still working on that because at first when they came out, there was like a disagreement among people whether or not they should be audibles because of the recipes. A lot of readers say, when I'm done reading them, they often will go into my kitchen because then I use them as cookbooks because I use the recipes in the back. But I think you are 100% correct when you say they read well out loud. And yeah, so yeah. Now we're just searching for a narrator with a good Northern Minnesota Scandinavian accent. Mm-hmm. And then I think we'll get going on the audibles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a passage later on in the book about a cat. And I told Bobby, if Gene doesn't read something, I'll have to read this passage. I have never read anything like that when a person encounters a cat. Unbelievable.
Do you have that passage?
Yeah, I do.
Because I'm not thinking of it right now. So you're going to have to read it.
I got it.
He's got it. Okay, listen here, right into the mic.
I spotted a cat playing with an empty pop can. It eyed me with an expression that indicated it found me lacking. A wuss, if you will. Then again, I may have been projecting. The alley frightened me, and my family's recent troubles and my inability to remedy them had left me feeling woefully inadequate. Even so, I scowled at the cat, letting it know that while I might be a wuss, I'll sleep indoors when the day was done.
Yeah,
that was Doris. That's Doris, our M&M eating woman. Yeah. there are just so many. There was the one. There was one time when such a fun phrase. The person was describing something, said as happy as a butcher's dog.
Yeah.
You know, and another as happy like a dog with two tails. You know, there's just things that are probably sayings.
Mm-hmm. Top of them.
Yeah,
sayings. Everybody has those sayings, or just you?
Well, no. You know, as writers, we're coached in our whatever classes we go to. Don't use cliches. Don't use cliches. Well, I break that rule because if you're going to write about a certain group, or in my case, this population of people up in northwestern Minnesota, and the young people may not use those kind of phrase,
right,
but the older people certainly do. And you probably see that in your community too. Mm-hmm. There might be groups that use different cliches all the time.
Mm-hmm. And they're fun if they're not something that you're familiar with. I have a friend with Oklahoma roots, and she would say "cool beans," and the first time she said it, I was like, "What does?" You know, cool beans, you've never heard that before? Well, I use cool beans all the time now. And women around me that have never heard it are just like laugh, and then they start to use it. And I think that it is trying to find some freshness in what we say.
Yeah.
Which makes it so fun.
Yeah.
Let's talk about these ladies. Let's talk about some of the characters. We have Doris and Grace. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about these two main women, these sisters?
Well, they're middle-aged. One is, what, I think about 60 and one's 58 or right in there. Doris is older. Grace is a couple years younger, but Grace thinks she's the boss. And they grew up there. Doris, our protagonist, never went away. She stayed there, married young. Grace, on the other hand, went off to college and culinary school in New York and worked as a chef in some fine restaurants. But then she felt the tug of home, so she went back and opened the little diner, the only cafe in town. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they are. And then they, when Doris's husband died, her philandering husband, She passed the farm on to her kids, which often is the case. And she wanted to move to town, but she had always lived in this farmhouse. So as will happen sometimes, Jim and I talked about this, they lifted the house up and carted it right to town. And so now Doris is living on the edge of town, and that's her life. And she conned Grace into moving with her, and then they ended up taking in Rose, this 90-year-old family friend of theirs. So, and then there's also Doris's daughter, who's like a 27-year-old deputy sheriff. So, yeah, there are these four interesting women at the center of the story.
Grace is referred to as a short Barbie doll.
Yeah. I think you can sum up their characters. I'm not sure. Do I say this in this book? I'm never sure what got cut. Doris was Doris Day Anderson before she got married. And Grace is Grace Kelly Anderson.
I think you do say that
okay,
in the book.
Because their mother was a Swedish immigrant who loved the stars of the old big screen. So her daughters were named Doris Day and Grace Kelly.
Yes. And aging is a part of this theme. There are a couple of reoccurring themes. We've already talked a bit about food, which is a huge part of the of the story. But aging also is reoccurs and in very different ways. And partly we have older characters. Grace doesn't seem to necessarily be overly concerned. She still wears very fun. She wears T-shirts with hysterical sayings on them. That aren't quite, you know, if you were talking to her, you would have to look. I mean, Doris is kind of dealing with a little bit of, she's recognizing some weight gain. She definitely, like me, is into sweets. And as always, that helps her with stress, is to have some sweets around. But they're recognizing that they're getting a little bit older, and Rose is 90. And so, you create a wonderful character with Rose. She's 90, but she's a spitfire, even though she has problems with dentures and, you know, those different, the physical things. Tell me a little bit about why you chose to, have characters at those ages and have aging be part of this story.
Well, in the first series, my Hot Dish Heaven series, the three-book series I did in the beginning, my protagonist was a young woman, and that was fun. And there were some older people in the cast of characters. And then this time, I said, I want to do a story, I want to do a series where the central characters are older. And I said, I want to do that for the same reason I want to write about these rural farm communities, because otherwise they're forgotten. You know, everything kind of revolves around the big cities, and everything revolves around young people. And I just wanted to focus on older people and these little communities, because I thought there's a story to tell from there too.
Well, yeah, you bring, it's interesting that it kind of comes up in the cafe. It's like we have all these different little groups. You know, we have the moms of the children. You know, we have the farmers. We have the law enforcement guys. We have the hunters. And we have the gossips.
And don't we, I mean, it doesn't matter, I don't think, where we live. I think every community, whether it's a retirement community, you know, in modular homes or some manufactured homes somewhere, or a little town community, we all have those different groups. There's all those different little cliques.
And we have the two guys that tell the jokes. We have You have to help me with the names now.
Oli Svendard.
His jokes are terrible.
But they're so terrible, they're funny.
Well, and don't we all have somebody in our group of friends
who
tells terrible jokes?
We groan, but we laugh.
We have a musician friend who tells them like Evan Stage.
Yeah, in fact, we should pass some of these on to him. He might add them to his repertoire. That's so funny. Let's see. Let's talk about food.
First of all, it's like that movie Lost Weekend with these M&M's. Doris has got these steaks everywhere.
Yes, she does.
You know, under the bed, in the counter. You know, she encounters them. Oh, I didn't know I had some here.
I know. She finds some in the back of a drawer next to the
nightstand. You never know when you might need an M&M.
Yes, and then she goes an empty bag. Oh my God, I don't have it. Wait. I think there's one in the bottom.
There's one in the bottom. That scene with her son Will, and there's one left in the bottom.
I love when Will says to her, he walks in and the bag's half empty, and she says, "Well, I'm going to make cookies." Like anybody believes that. He goes, Yeah, right, Mom.
Yeah, Mom.
You have a bunch of recipes in the back, but you have all these recipes occur somewhere in the storyline.
Right.
And they all come in the back. I want to ask you about one. You know, there's a lot of different things in there. And, of course, you call hot dishes, or we would call casseroles.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because if you call it a casserole in the Midwest, especially up in northern Minnesota, you're going to get kicked out of town. It's a hot
good to know.
Yeah.
Well, I did want to ask about one of them.
Okay.
A rhubarb muffin.
The rhubarb muffin.
That's to die for.
Is it really good? I mean, it stars in the book, so.
Yeah.
The only reason I ask is the only person I ever knew to cook with rhubarb in my family was my grandmother. I never liked rhubarb.
Oh.
And once in a while it ended up in a pie, but most of the time she served it as a dish at dinner. And for me, it had better have about 14 cups of sugar, you know, to make the thing palatable. But, so I was always very surprised when all these dishes for rhubarb would show up for people to say, "Oh, I got this," or "I got rhubarb pie, you should have it." I said, "What, are you crazy?"
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Rhubarb is big around here. Okay. And it's funny because in the spring in the early summer when it gets ripe. Everybody's like, now they go on social media and say, "I'm a cup short. Anybody have some stock?" Or anybody have any I can pick? I really want to make something, and I'm out. You know, my rhubarb patch is done. You know,
it's done.
Yeah.
Well, it has. You know, it has buttermilk and walnuts.
It's incredible.
And the topping is light brown sugar and a half cup ground cinnamon. It has in the batter light brown sugar. It's got one egg. I mean, what is not to love about that recipe? Yeah.
But now some people are like Jim, they just don't like rhubarb.
Well, you know, when we lived in California and we moved from the East Coast, we moved from New England to California, and it just took forever to like avocado and, you know, things that were not things that we were accustomed to.
Right.
And so I think, you know, rhubarb may be that way for people who they've just never really had it before.
No, in different parts of the country, you can't get it. Uh-huh. And so that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But there are other recipes too. In fact, every book that I write, so all four of the ones that are out now, they all have recipes in them. And the recipes are all different. We don't repeat.
So would you ever consider putting them all together in a cookbook with photos?
We're talking about that.
That could be really fun. And
yeah,
and then, you know, put in some quotes from the book or whatever. And
yeah,
or the quote, like where that the paragraph that recipe is mentioned, right, in would be really right fun. Oh, how fun. All right, let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, my gosh.
Talk about, how about the male characters?
Oh, wait, we have one more question.
Oh, oh, really?
There is an hysterical scene with Grace and Doris.
Yeah.
Under a bed.
Yeah.
And it seemed a bit far-fetched as a reader, but then I just put the book down for a moment, and I thought about Lucy and Ethel. And I thought about, you know, the two girls that were in the fun sitcom in Milwaukee where they worked for a brewery. I can't remember that. You would know. You know,
Laverne and Shirley.
Laverne and Shirley. And I just started thinking about women getting into situations. Talk a little bit about these two gals. They just play off each other. I mean, you write the funniest scenes because of the way that they operate together.
Well, sometimes you have no choice but to hide under a bed. of course they're somewhere where they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And so then they get caught. Well, it's a one room apartment. It's a studio apartment. So where are they going to go? You know, so they have no choice but to sneak under the bed.
It's so funny. It's a great scene.
It is funny. Yeah.
Well, particularly when the other two people in there are about ready to get in the
bed. Well, I know. You know, yeah. And I was saying again, you know, I was saying to Jim, well, our bed is high enough off the ground somebody could go under, but there's a lot of storage. You know, you would find different things under our bed than they found under that particular bed.
Right.
You know, but you wouldn't be able to get two people under our bed and not have all kinds of empty boxes and things, you know, that store Hallmark ornaments and has trucks and, you know, empty box display boxes that are under that bed.
And there are things under her bed, too.
Oh, there are indeed. Very important things. It was important they got under that bed.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. Such a funny scene. Such a funny scene. You were going to, you had a question. Oh, I'm sorry.
We have a couple key male folks here. Do you want to comment on them?
Well.
At least the sheriff, anyway.
Right. Almost every cozy has an element of romance. And it doesn't need to be too involved. And at least at this point, Carl, the sheriff, and Doris, our protagonist, are not too involved. They kind of have this little love-hate thing going.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't sure what to do about each other. They had dated when they were young and in high school, and now they both went through a lot of stuff. Well, now they're 60s, and they're back together thrown together in this town where they are both trying to solve a mystery, a murder. And he, as Jim said, he has his job to do. And Doris doesn't always like how he does it or or what he is thinking. And so there's this back and forth. And it's a lot of fun, actually.
But she kind of likes the way he smells.
Yes, she does like how she smells.
Like a pine tree, a wood fire.
Yeah.
Oh, so fun. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, of course, we have a couple hot waitresses. Yes.
Because don't all small town diners have at least one waitress?
Absolutely.
Who is just,
absolutely,
I don't know. She probably isn't the best waitress in the world, but nobody wants to get rid. None of those farmers who come in at 6:30 in the morning for coffee and breakfast want to get rid of her.
Yep. They don't really care if the coffee spills over the cup or anything.
Right.
Do they?
You know, you have a lot of fun characters in the book. Did any of them ever surprise you as your writing was going forward?
Well, I think so. Now, I went into this a little bit another time. And what I say is there are two kinds of writers. One's called a planner, and they outline everything. And so for them, they just follow the outline. So more often than not, nothing is going to surprise them. The advantage to that is they get done with their book, though. Then there's pantsers, and I'm more of a pantser, although I'm trying to garner some of the traits of the planner, because a pantser just writes by the seat of their pants. And what's fun about that is your characters, they might go all over the place, and so they can surprise you. But then you have to go back and you have to throw so much out because it doesn't move the story forward. And then you have to do so many rewrites that often then I'm over deadline.
Because it's a
publisher.
Because it's a mystery, do you know, even though you're a pantser, do you kind of know who your victim is going to be and ultimately, you know, who the murderer is, so that you are giving us the trail of breadcrumbs, you're giving us some clues and things along the way? Or does that even reveal itself to you and then you have to kind of go back and make sure that you've left some evidence, clues or evidence?
Yeah, I have to see, I still have to go back a lot, and I'd like to get better at that, you know, as time goes on, as I do more stories, so I could put them out a little faster. But I actually have had this. I've done four. I'm writing my fifth one. In a couple of them, I actually had this idea in my head, and then I couldn't do it. I wanted a different person to be the victim and a different person to be the killer. Mm. So then I had to go back and rewrite. But sometimes it's just how it works out.
How interesting.
Yeah.
We're gonna take another very short break and hear a little bit from our sponsor, Out West Shop. And then when we come back, we want to find out what's coming up next and how people can find you and maybe a writing tip or two. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Mind the Rule with the Writer. With Jim and Bobby Bell and special guest Gene Cooney and her book, It's Murder, Don't You Know?
You made a comment the other night that was quite interesting. It was a little bit having to do with marketing of books and marketing in where you need to market in Minnesota and you're in your area versus perhaps other areas of the country. Would you want to talk on that at all?
Yeah, of course, all my books can be found nationally. You can go to Amazon or an independent bookstore. And if they don't have it on the shelf, being they have this is in the weeds a little bit, but any book that has an IBM number, they can find it. And then they can order it for you. You can get it through Target. You can get it through Walmart the same way. So, and that goes for all books that are published by a publisher. The problem is, though, readers oftentimes buy books kind of on impulse. And so that means you got to pound the pavement. So in our area, being we have very short summers, communities have lots of community festivals during that time. And so what you have to do is just pack up the car and go to festival after festival, because that's when a lot of people will buy books. They see it. They get a chance to talk to you. They want it signed. Yeah. Maybe they want to give it as a gift. That's when you're really going to sell a lot of books. And I don't know how that would translate to other parts of the country. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I pretty much have done my in-person marketing in Wisconsin, the Dakotas, and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that would translate.
Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting. I think still the person-to-person, today the person-to-person is still the best. And yeah. I think people, as much as they know they can get books many, many different kinds of ways, it's still actually meeting and seeing or hearing a writer read aloud or you know, if it's an actual book signing, you know, in a library or a bookstore. Or at a festival. Because festivals, especially after COVID, we're all anxious to sort of be out and about and with each other again. And so exactly. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you ever get writer's block?
You know, I've been fortunate so far. I have never experienced that. I might have trouble with a paragraph. And how am I going to write this or whatever? I'm not sure what clues I should be leaving or something, but that's different. I don't really have, I've never had writer's block.
All right. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I love writing. So I just keep doing it.
Do you have a writer question?
Tips. Do you have a particular tip for an up and coming writer or an established writer?
Okay. I have a couple pet peeves. So then from that I'll have tips. I've been to many writing conferences over the years. I'll hear a writer say, and I don't mean to pick on anybody, Jim, but it's often a male writer who will say, if you can't sit down and write first thing in the morning for 4 hours, you know, you're never going to make it. Or if you can't write, you know, these big blocks of time, just forget it. And I dispute that, because for a lot of would-be writers, a lot of them who are women, who are juggling kids or elderly parents and jobs and all this, they need to write in little snippets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might
have,
yeah, and I think that's hard, but I don't think it's impossible, and I don't think anybody should discourage that.
Yeah, we would agree. We would agree to that. We I can't believe I'm looking at the clock. Oh my gosh, Jean, we're like almost out of time. So very quickly, where can people find you, follow you and such?
Well, my website is www.jeancooney, and my name is on the screen, I think.
Yep.
Jean Cooney, all run together, no caps, no punctuation, .com.
Okay.
Jean. And then you can look up my author page under my name and then author on Facebook.
Okay.
If you just do my name on Facebook, you end up seeing nothing but pictures of my little granddaughter. So you need to do author. Yeah. Yep.
Jim always pulls a couple quotes together. And what have you got for us tonight, Jim?
Well, we have to come right from the book for one of them, of course. Thesaurus and Girls. Thesaurus and Girls are gossiping about Doris cooking. And Doris says, I hated Thesaurus and Sisters. Okay, that wasn't nice. I didn't hate them, but if they ever caught fire, and I had a bucket of water, I'd drink it. We have one that ties in with food. From the late comedian W.C. Fields. I cook with wine. Sometimes I even add it to the food.
Yeah.
Oh, Gene, it's been so much fun having with you tonight. This has just been great. Again, one more time, we've been talking about her book, It's Murder, Don't You Know, by Jean Cooney. Next week is the first Thursday in September. We can't believe it. And so Henry Park will be with us, the film editor of True West Magazine, as he is with us the first Thursday of every month. And then we have two guests joining Henry Park and us. Cowboy poet, a very interesting, Daryl Arnold. Daryl is a prolific and fabulous poet. He also works with songwriters and musicians, and Tom Hyatt will be joining us. These two gentlemen together just released a brand new 5-song CD of Tom Hyatt's called 5 from the Heart of the West. We are so delighted you were all with us tonight.
Thank you, Jean.
We will see you down the road next week. Remember,
it's always a great day
out west. Bye-bye. Happy trails. Keep writing and reading.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only